You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.
Hi, everyone. This is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape. This is This Week in Cardiology for May 29th, 2015. This week, I'm talking about PCSK9 inhibitors, statins, alcohol, big data, blood pressure treatment in the elderly, informed consent, and a cardiology perspective from 1995. So first up this week is that a European Medicine Agency committee recommended approval of Evalcumab, which is Amgen's PCSK9 inhibitor. The committee recommended approval as an adjunct to diet in patients with high cholesterol who have not reached LDL target while taking statin therapy. Also eligible for the PCSK9 inhibitor would be statin intolerance patients, patients with contraindications to statins, and those with familial hypercholesterolemia. This is a first step, but a big step towards approval of these drugs in the European Union. An advisory committee from the FDA will meet on June 10th to review efficacy and safety data for Evalcumab and Elarucrumab. And it would be a mistake to call the PCSK inhibitor story anything but huge. These drugs have striking effects on LDL. But will they lower cardiovascular outcomes or improve cardiovascular outcomes? Will they prove to be safe over the long term? Will they prove to be valuable? And when I say value, I mean benefit over cost. These are questions that remain, and this will remain a big story in cardiology for years to come. Next up is the Dutch view of statin therapy. Now, I'm part Dutch, so I'm biased, but I consider the Dutch people pretty with it. They have great scores on happiness and health outcomes. Yet, according to a large cohort study presented at the International Symposium on Atherosclerosis in Amsterdam, the use of statin drugs is shockingly low in the Netherlands. Researchers studied more than 70,000 patients in a cohort study called the Lifeline Study, and they found that 80% of statin-eligible primary prevention patients were not taking statins. They also found 1 in 3 patients with established cardiovascular disease, so secondary prevention patients, were not taking statins. Now, this study wasn't perfect, but it does speak to a large gap between what is recommended and what is actually happening. Now, the standard way to look at these findings would be that the Dutch need to get it together, get with the guidelines, and increase statin use. But another way to look at the Dutch are that they're pretty darn smart. They have decent health, population health. They boast excellent bike safety, yet no bike helmets. And, you know, maybe their statin reluctance and embrace of physical activity is something that we could learn from rather than just reflexly scold. Next up is the issue of alcohol. And I'll start with a bike racing rule. Bike racers have a rule and an idea about alcohol, and that is to reach peak form on the bike, you abstain from alcohol. And that's because alcohol lowers muscle performance, and the heart, obviously, is a muscle. And that's why I was intrigued by a study from Brigham and Women's researchers on the relationship between alcohol intake and cardiac structure and function. These researchers used data from the ERIC study, that's Atherosclerosis Risk and Community Study, and they looked at more than 4,000 elderly men and women. Overall, they found that alcohol intake was associated with larger diastolic and systolic diameters, bigger left atriums, and they found gender differences. In women, alcohol intake associated with slightly lower ejection fraction and increased longitudinal strain. And though, again, this was an association study, the researchers were careful to control for confounders. And I bring this up because alcohol is a hot topic, and the effects clearly vary by dose, and individual susceptibility also varies. But I spend a lot of time in my practice counseling patients to stop drinking or to markedly reduce their dose of alcohol. And when they do, good things usually happen. So this study lends credence to a cycling rule, and anything that does that, I like. So alcohol, it can affect the heart, cardiac structure, function. I'm of the camp, less alcohol or no alcohol. Let's talk next about big data and healthcare research. In just 2 months, more than 40,000 people downloaded a smartphone app and joined a global research study on heart disease and physical activity. At a presentation during the Big Data in Biomedicine Conference in Palo Alto, California, Stanford researchers, together with the AHA, designed a free smartphone app that they call My Heart Counts. Anyone can download the app, then give consent to be in a study, answer basic health questions, and let the sensors from the phone record their movement. Importantly, and this is one of the reasons why I like this study, is that the researchers emphasize the use of the 6-minute walk test. I think the 6-minute walk test is an underappreciated health metric. But the main reason to mention this presentation is that it demonstrates how big data can be harnessed at minimal cost. And this is, as Dr. Eric Topol, editor-in-chief of Medscape, has said, is the future of research. Increasingly, study participants will be the ones entering their data. Last year at AHA, I reported on the Health eHeart study, which was from the UCSF, which is also a smartphone-based study that has been likened to a modern-day Framingham study. And as a person who has and does participate in clinical research, old-school research, it's just shocking how amazing the smartphone can be as a research tool, and this is clearly the future. Next up is blood pressure treatment in the elderly. Now, the ideal blood pressure is something that experts are still arguing about, and we can all agree that high blood pressure is bad. But we can also agree that low blood pressure is bad, especially in the elderly. And in yet another study of elderly patients, and aggressive pharmacologic blood pressure control is associated with harm. This is a study from the University of Michigan researchers, which was presented at the American Geriatric Society meeting in Maryland. They looked at longitudinal data in more than 5,000 participants in the University of Michigan Health and Retirement Study. The mean age of these patients was 75. More than half were female patients. And they found that when systolic blood pressure was lower than 120, cardiovascular events and falls increased. And again, I mention these studies because it confirms previous findings of harm from aggressive medical treatments of the elderly. And I want to use this study to talk about the important verb deprescribe. We prescribe things so we can also deprescribe. In medicine, I like to think of a rule as what was isn't necessarily what is now. Conditions change. Aging lowers drug metabolism or affects drug metabolism. Aging decreases organ function. And once helpful drugs can turn harmful. So whenever I see elderly patients, I'm always thinking about deprescribing drugs. Two features I want to mention. One is from Tricia Ward, who is the editorial director at theheart.org on Medscape. Tricia is a friend, and she's a pro, and she's edits my writing, and I'm grateful for her work and professionalism. In celebration of Medscape's 20th birthday this year, Tricia takes us on a tour of cardiology dating back to 1995. And if you love cardiology, you'll love this piece, which she calls Cardiology 1995, The Rise of Stents and Statins. The second feature I want to mention is one of my own. And don't worry, I won't make a habit of promoting my own column, but this one is a little different. I want to call your attention to it. It involves a really sobering study on informed consent surrounding cardiology procedures. A group of researchers used taped interviews between cardiologists and patients. Cardiologists knew they were being taped. Researchers wanted to assess the quality of informed decision-making and how those discussions affected patients' choices. And the results were not good. And there are seven elements of informed consent, but only 3% of the discussions between patient and doctor had all seven elements, and only 14% had some minimal amount of discussion of risks, benefits, and alternatives. And the researchers also found that the elements of the discussion affected how patients chose therapy. For instance, if uncertainty was mentioned at all, and of course there's plenty of uncertainty in cardiology today, patients were 20 times more likely to choose a conservative approach. This column may make you a little mad at me, but I think it's a wake-up call for us to do better. And I know this study and looking at this study has motivated me to do better, to go slower, to talk about uncertainty, and to try and incorporate patients' preferences into the decision-making. So that's it for this week in cardiology for May 29th. Until next week, this is John Mandrola from theheart.org on Medscape.
You're listening to This Week in Cardiology from theheart.org on Medscape.